One of the things that fascinates me most and has been drawing a lot of my attention and will do that even more in the future is the idea that we can live to be 120 and healthy. So today I want to talk about live to be 120 and healthy. Recently I read an article that said that 1.7 million people die each year in the United States. 70% of those deaths are due to chronic diseases, and chronic diseases are largely lifestyle-caused diseases. So the people's lifestyle is what was causing the great majority of those people to die. I want to live to be at least 120 and healthy, and there are several reasons why. The first is being healthy. Hello. Being healthy is way more pleasant than being unhealthy. It's easy to appreciate life and living when we feel healthy, when we're free of pain, when we're free of suffering. So that's the main reason. The second reason is I believe that we as individuals actually decide how long we're going to live and what the quality of our life is going to be and when we're going to die. So not only when, but how we're going to die. I think it's actually constructed by the way we think and believe. Now, I don't believe that God or some external forces have us on puppet strings or are deciding that we have to die now. Oh, God wanted that person next to him. I don't think that's true. I think that's foolish. I don't think God is deciding when we live or die. I think we have decided that. I believe that we're the controlling force and we manage living and dying with our thoughts, with our feelings, the words we speak to ourselves and others, and our actions, our behaviors. We reap what we sow. I'm a firm believer in this idea, the law of cause and effect. It applies to our living, it applies to our health or lack thereof, and it applies to the end of our lives, our dying, and how it occurs. And I want to be a test case for this idea, for these beliefs. And I want to associate with other people who go, you know what, I believe the same thing. I think we can choose however long we want to live, and we can choose the way we exit physical life. And I want to be part of a community like that. I want to start one. The third thing is, I believe the main purpose of life is to grow spiritually. And we're using our physical body, and we're using our emotional body, and we're using our mental body in order to achieve this goal of spiritual growth. It occurs to me that I might need a lot more time to make a significant improvement or increase and movement toward my ultimate goal to reach Christ consciousness. To me, that is the top of the peak of spiritual growth, to achieve the same level of consciousness that Christ did. And I recognize that in order to overcome ego-influenced attitudes and behaviors, of which I have had plenty and I still have plenty, might take more than just this lifetime. Certainly, I would expect it to take more than a regular lifespan of 70 or 80 or however many years is normal. I think it's going to take longer than that. And that's why I want to extend my playing time in this lifetime to at least 120 years. And I want to be healthy, so I'm not focused on pain and suffering, but in fact, I'm focused on spiritual growth and how to achieve that and how to demonstrate that. I think the divine works for us, in us, and through us. And if we can recognize and appreciate and allow each of those phases for us, in us, and through us, since we've got to do a lot of good in our lives in the span of 120 or more years, and when we're healthy and we're not distracted by pain and suffering, we're going to be in a position to deliver a lot of good to a lot of people. That's very appealing. But I also subscribe to the idea of multiple lifetimes, and it doesn't faze me. I want to make as much progress spiritually in this lifetime, and then the next lifetime, presumably, I'll continue where I left off and advance even further. And after that, I'll continue where I left off and advance. That concept of multiple lives, to me, is actually reassuring. It's not scary. For a lot of people, it's like, oh, death, death, death. But I think largely death has been frightening to us as children is because we've been sold on this idea, you're born, you live, you die, you're judged, you go to heaven, you go to hell. Uh-oh, I hope you were good. And that ultimate test, if you will, wow, I only get one test, one lifetime? I don't think that's true. I think that's false. I think it's made up. So this repetition of lifetimes is kind of analogous to going to school. Gee, I went to school for kindergarten. I got to go back. I went to school for first grade. I got to go back. Haven't I completed this yet? I've completed the second grade. Aren't I done yet? And, of course, growth spiritually, mentally, emotionally, and physically never really ends until we leave the physical body. And then we still continue to grow on other levels. So it seems to me multiple lives make the most sense. And, in fact, more people on planet Earth believe in multiple lifetimes than those people who believe in a single lifetime. In terms of 120, I think it must be easier for an older person to let go of some ego impulses simply because he or she has already responded and reacted and given in to those ego impulses much earlier in life. And, you know, that didn't pay off. And over time, through many trials and even more errors, an older person could say, you know what, I'm not falling for that trick of advertising, of marketing, of other things that has been shown to me to be the ideal path to happiness, the sex, drugs, and rock and roll, pharmaceuticals, material things. I've tried that. Doesn't work. So an older person would have had those experiences and would be in a position to go, no. The ego, I can hear it when it speaks to me, is not going to drive my life any longer. I know it can be a major impediment to health and happiness and responsible living and kindness and so on. I'm no longer falling for that. A younger person, on the other hand, has more ego impulses, going to be influenced by it more often, and in all likelihood is going to tend to fall prey to the hype, the advertising, and the other things that are put out there. So I think there are some serious advantages to be older, more mature, maybe even a bit wiser. The fourth point is, because it's obvious to me that there is a source of life force, call it what you will, God, Yahweh, Allah, Jehovah, infinite intelligence, universal consciousness, God, all of those words I think work. It depends on what resonates for an individual. There is a source. This loving intelligence is available. It is the source of life force. And you know what? We want more life, capital L, in our life, lowercase l. And it makes sense if we do want more life, which has got to be the antidote to illness and unhappiness and lack of success, we would want to go to the source of life. The book Christ Returns reveals startling truth, which I think is my all-time favorite book of a lot of books. It does a really excellent job of describing how this source of life force, the divine consciousness, God, is actually working on our behalf. What it's trying to do for us, what it's trying to supply, how it tries to support us. Also in that book, the description of how the human ego, which is a natural aspect of our existence and physicality, is performing or behaving in a different way. If we fall for that, we're going to need greater understanding of how that ego exhibits itself through our personality. and fungus. And there's plenty of advice in that book about how we can live life. And frankly, I want to apply the knowledge in this book. It really makes perfect sense to me. I want to use it as kind of as my guidebook. I'll say this is going to be the owner's manual for me on my climb of consciousness or my climb of the mountain of time to live to be 120 and healthy. There's got to be some sort of guidebook, rule book, navigational assistance. And I think that book really contains all the information necessary to do it. You're familiar with, and so am I, with the cookbooks, recipe books, user manuals for hardware and software, instruction manuals for car maintenance or for other equipment, all levels of guidebooks for travel if you want to go to another country or to another city. That's really common to us. For me, this source of information is fantastic in that regard. I premeditatedly intend to live to be 120 and healthy by applying the principles that Christ has delivered through this book, through this channel. Seems to me to make perfect sense. But I bet if we put 100 or 1,000 people in a room and say, do you know what you need to do in order to live to be fill in the blank any number of years, 80, 90, 100, 120, pretty much everybody knows what to do and what not to do. That's not the challenge. The challenge is not to know what would be beneficial and what would be harmful. The challenge is to elevate our consciousnesses so that we can make decisions that are more in alignment with living fully and completely, happily, healthily, and successfully to whatever lifetime we want. And we do that by aligning ourselves with this Father God, Mother God energy that is going to empower us on our journey, climbing the mountain of time and the mountain of consciousness. When I look at life, you know, I want to live. I want to live. Live what? I want to live my life. Well, I find it convenient to categorize human activities in a certain way to make it easier to get your mind around things. I refer to this as the 12 worlds, or could be 12 areas of human activity. Pretty much anything that you or I do would fit into one or more of these categories. And when you look at it, you go, oh, some of these categories are more important to us than others. Some are really, really significant, and some not significant at all. And so what we'd really want to do is this beautiful dog now is big dog is drinking from a water bowl that you could probably hear in your house and not necessarily over the internet or over the telephone line. Let me continue. So if you look at your activities in this context of these 12 worlds or 12 areas, spiritual, mental, emotional, physical, family, career, financial, social, leisure, community, political, and maintenance, that you can say, pretty much everything is going to impact that. So if some area right now, is extremely important to you, health, which would be the physical world, or finances, or career, you could like, or relationship, that would be family, or your student, it would be the mental world, perhaps. You would look at these things and would go, you know what? I got to take a look at that more deeply because that's really impacting my health, my happiness, my success. I got to look at this. And as we become more mindful, as we become more aware, as we become more conscious, our ability to direct or influence or manage our lives are so much better. It's this unknowingness. I don't know how stuff happens. That's tremendously disadvantaging of us, and it's false. It doesn't need to be that way. So becoming mindful by putting our attention and intention on those areas that are, number one, most important to us, and perhaps at this moment, the ones that are most disturbing of our peace is going to put us in a position to be able to create the conditions that we want to experience in life. Life does not happen to us. We happen to life. We cause life in the way we think, feel, speak, and act. It's like we're always impacting life. And if we got that sense of our power to influence, to direct, to manage, to coordinate, like, oh, yeah, I'm very causative, I'm very creative, and that's really what we need to get, because that's reality. If you look at any one of these 12 worlds and go, every time I put my attention at it, I start to stress, I get all anxious or some other negative emotion, you could go, whoa, what's the definition of stress again? A non-specific response to a demand placed upon the body. So if you look at any one of those worlds and say, this is causing me stress whenever I put my attention on this aspect of my life, and I get angry or I get fearful or I get sad or something else, you go, hey, that's negatively impacting my ability to live to be 120 and healthy. I've got to change my relationship with this aspect of my life, with experiences that I've had in this area of my life, and of the future experiences that I'm going to have. And I want those experiences in the future to be the way I want, to be high vibration, to be empowering, enhancing of my life force, help me to fulfill some great spiritual purpose, which is to understand and experience your source of being, your God. You know, thinking that God is way, way up in the clouds somewhere, really, really far away from you, is not true. It's within and around us, and experiencing and understanding it is really the goal. That's what's meant by spiritual growth, not woo-woo stuff. It is to have that power show up every minute of every day. You know, the definition of stress that I use is the one developed by Hans Selye. He was the medical doctor, and he was actually talking about physical stuff as compared to emotional, mental things as we do. The stress is a non-specific response to a demand placed upon the body, although it's obviously very applicable on a lot of different levels. But I'm wondering if that definition of most stress could be expanded to be this: a demand placed upon the body by the mind, placed upon the body by the mind. And you go, oh, yeah. I don't know about you, but my fears are mind-created. My doubts are mind-created. A lot of the stuff that interferes with our happiness is the stuff that's presented to us by our conscious minds. Look out. Be careful. This is not, oh, that's bad. When we go into that judgment, that is a conscious mind problem. Rejection, denigration, criticism, those are conscious mind tools of the ego that, in theory, will protect us. In reality, they harm us, make us prisoners, toxify us. Not good stuff. But, like, oh, yeah. These demands that I'm experiencing, I got to do this, I must do that, and are placed by the mind. It's like, If you got that going on, a lot of feelings like, must do something, I have to do something, I should do something, I should have done something 11 years ago on a given day. Oh, and we're still holding on that as a demand. I should have done something 11 years ago. Guess what? You're not going to do something that occurred 11 years ago. You can change your relationship with what happened 11 years ago, and you could learn from what happened 11 years ago so you don't recreate that. But undoing it, make it not have happened, you're not going to be able to respond that way. And this is where letting go of demands can be so powerful to us. But if our minds don't process information accurately, and they don't when we're under stress, then there's a real problem. But if our minds don't process an environmental signal as a demand, guess what? There's no demand. There's no demand, and there's no stress. And there's no beating of the self to do something because there's no need to do something. There's no call for that. That impulse to do something wouldn't exist without these demands that are put in place largely by our own imagining of our mind. If you look at the 12 worlds, it seems clear that stress is more likely to be a problem in certain worlds than in others. You look at your leisure world, and on the one hand, you turn like leisure world, you know, playing golf or going bowling or playing backgammon or bingo, or it's like, that's not really that stressful. That's not really that stressful. Well, in theory, you would say that that's true. However, I can recall getting a call from a client, a woman in her 70s. I said, well, what do you want to work on? The thing that's supposed to mean stress. I said, okay, what is that? My golf game. Your golf game? Yeah, my golf game. I play with people my own age and maybe a little younger, and they play better golf than I do. And, you know, my golf game is going to hell, and I'm afraid, and I hesitate. And so fear, stress of performance had impacted this woman in her leisure world and her emotional world. And now in her social relationships, because she seemed kind of weird on the golf course, hesitating over a ball before she swings. In the middle of a swing, she stops, and it's like, and that was causing her stress. You go, oh, I get it. But if we would look at most of us, I think we could say, well, you know what? My family, most stress shows up in my family or my career or my finances or the physical world as well, my body, my health. It's like, okay. I would say that's most stressful, generally speaking. The fact that I mentioned family, I do it for various reasons. And one of them is that many aspects of our identity, that is, who you think you are, was shaped by people in your family. It's like, oh, yeah, that's right. My sense of self was influenced by my family of origin. So much so, I have a concept that I refer to as death by family, which says those influences implanted by family members are likely to show up as the cause of death. If anybody really looked deeply at somebody's death, at 1.7 million people, and the 70% who die from lifestyle diseases, and they were to go deeper and deeper into the underlying causes, they're going to find death by family as the main cause. Our relationships with our family members, what they said and did, and what they didn't say and do to us when we were young people. Because the beliefs that we get from our family members about ourselves, about life, and the ones we give to our family members can kill us and them. If you turn around and look at death in your family member, you go, yeah. I see how that worked. I'm one of seven children. There are three of us still alive physically. Four have died from death by family. I can make that case. I could substantiate that point of view. Family world, huge to us. Now, in a normal conversation, people have learned to be able to say, well, you know, you look at these 12 worlds, starting with spiritual, mental, emotional, physical, family. You go, oh, well, the spiritual world is really, really important to me. Oh, yeah, that's like, because people think that's what they're supposed to say. Ultimately, I think it's true that you certainly want to develop that spiritual world, but young people are not thinking that. They're thinking of financial world or relationships or other things. They're not thinking of spiritual world. I think you have to have a lot of wisdom and a lot of trials and errors before you realize how important that is. And I think, as I said a minute ago, that it is probably the family world that has the greatest influence over our health, our happiness, our success, and any ability that we have to live to be 120 and healthy. If you say this is the kind of the manufacturing place of identity, your identity was, you know, besides what you would have arrived with, but from conception to, say, I'll go to about 12 years old, that our identity was developed or misdeveloped within our family of origin. This is the factory, right? How our mothers felt about themselves and others in the family, including us. How our fathers felt about themselves and others in the family, including us. How our siblings, brothers and sisters felt about us, aunts and uncles, grandparents, whomever else in the family had a chance to exchange energy with us. How they felt about themselves and us would have been imprinted upon us. We're like cookie dough on a counter, and all of these people had little shaped molds in their consciousness. Oh, she's a star. Boom. Yeah. No, she's not. And they would have changed that. Somebody else says, yes, she's this. Boom. And you go, oh, yeah. We all process environmental signals, things we hear, feel, see, smell, taste, touch, all of that stuff, and things that we just know. Those environmental signals, we've been processing them from the earliest moments of physicality, and they shape us. They shape us. You think this incoming energy signal is, I can't see it. How can it be very influential? How can it put dents in my consciousness? Brain scientists now have discovered in the last, I don't know, 10, 12, 15 years that humiliating a child can stunt the development of their brain. Like, whoa. Environmental signals can really make a huge impact upon us. You know, hoo-wee. So, all of these people, family members, and even close friends of parents and so on, when they came into our environments, because we're so malleable, we're so moldable, we're so easy to be influenced for those first, I don't know, I'll say a dozen years of our lives, is all of this stuff. And even religions are imparted to us. This is good and this is bad and on and on and on. Teachers, peers, you know, our little friends in the playground, all of those people are providing environmental signals that are shaping us. If you grew up in a household that was volatile and people were malfunctioning on some level, mentally, physically, or emotionally, you're like, it's kind of like living on a plane where there are lightning and thunderstorms all the time, and tornadoes, and cold, and warmth, and inadequate support and care. It's like, I'm getting hot, I'm cold, I'm thirsty, and there's nobody providing for your needs. It's like we start to try to give meaning to these experiences. We try to shape how we think about this. And, okay, let me create a rule of life. Let me create another rule of life. And these programming statements are made by us when we're in the least capable mentally, emotionally to make up these rules, but we do it anyway. We do it in the presence of people who are malfunctioning, which is the worst possible time. It's like, okay, that's worst possible time to make rules of life is when we make rules of life. Like, and then we're stuck with those rules of life. And we're tripping over them on our way to 120. This always happens in my family. Everybody in my family has this experience. Everybody dies at, and we all, those things are energy packets of information delivered to us and perhaps unknowingly accepted as valid when the truth is, they're not valid at all. They're not valid at all. We just say, okay, this is true. This is true. We accept a lot of this programming from malfunctioning people. We have to overcome that. And when we have these energy exchange experiences in the family, which of course is where most of this early stuff is happening, it actually has the greatest potential for good, because if we're encouraged even a couple of times, attaboy, attagirl, you can do it. You're a cutie, you're a smarty pants, you're a good child, you've got great, right? Those kind of words have tremendous potential. Those seed thoughts planted in our consciousness, if nurtured, have tremendous potential. But so do similar things where the opposite value is there. What's wrong with you? You'll never do anything right. You'll never amount to anything. Those kind of things. Those seed thoughts are planted in our consciousness as well. And when they're reinforced and when they're nurtured and watered by us or others in our environments, as we call vulva, those things like the weeds are overgrowing the flowers. How is that possible? Because they're the ones that are being energized. They're the ones that are being watered. They're the ones that are being fed through our thoughts, feelings, words, and actions. That's what will prevent us from living to be 120 and healthy. Probably interfere with us living. Probably interfere with any decent number. And certainly would interfere with us being healthy. So if we could look at the family of origin and go, I got to clean that up. I got to clean that up. If it's got the greatest potential for good and the greatest potential for harm, guess what? I need to tend to that world. That's a garden I want to sort out. I want to weed. I want to reorganize. I would say, you bet. You bet. Those energy exchanges between you and your family members, between family members and other family members that you witnessed, that you were a party to just by being able to see it, then that would be a whole thing. That would be a real, real important concept. If you think about that, even for a moment, you would go, you know what? That is the world I really, really have to deal with. Because that's the world we carry with us all the time. Even if we're single and 100 years old, we're still carrying the energy imprints from our family of origin. And it makes sense to me, because you could, like, where did you get your earliest beliefs about you? From the people in your family. Where did you get your politics? Where did you get your first religious inputs? From people in your family. Where did you learn about life? Who told you about people? Were they good or were they bad? About different races and ethnicities, were they good or were they bad? Where did you get that? You got it from your family of origin. They shape these bricks of consciousness and stack them in us and around us. And we go, oh, yeah. And we've accepted a lot of that stuff, and over time, if we wised up and went, oh, well, they told me the world was flat, now I know better, then we can reject or let go of some of the nonsense that has been imparted to us over the course of our lives. We start to free ourselves of the encumbrance of erroneous beliefs and superstitions and fears and prejudices. Not true, let it go. Not true, let it go. Not true, let it go. If anybody in our family, and I think this is a foregone conclusion, actually, if anybody in our family broadcasted negative images to us about us, those images need to be healed in order for us to live to be 120 and healthy. Negative images planted in our consciousnesses are going to grow and become toxic, and they're going to produce illness or unhappiness or suffering. And we have these images. It's inevitable. A child who drops a glass or spills a glass of milk or doesn't tie his or her shoes correctly or comes home with a B when the parent expects it to be an A or gets something less than 100 or does something else that doesn't meet the expectations of that parent, and that parent reacts unkindly, verbally, or even with a look, that plants a negative seed that that child is inevitably going to try to give meaning to. Now, it would be great if that child would go, oh, mommy's having a bad hair day, or sister's having a bad hair day, or she's having a period, or daddy is, got yelled at work, and that's what I'm seeing him trying to get back into balance. Now, each of those is probably true in a lot of cases, but a child actually being able to process information like that, not at all likely. That child would have gone, something is wrong with me, or they wouldn't be like that. They wouldn't be acting like this toward me if something wasn't wrong with me. That's false. That's false. They're acting toward us the way they acted toward us because of their own consciousness. Not because of our consciousness, because of their own consciousness. This internal pressure, this demand inside of them that they were trying to respond to get back into balance. They, like a thunderstorm, were seeking, unknowingly, a lightning rod. And in some cases, we were that lightning rod. To debug the human computer, years ago, about 15 or 18 years ago, I got that idea. Debug the human computer. I've been wanting to write a book with that title ever since. Because these programming statements that get delivered to us by people typing on our keyboard, and by that I mean this idea. Bruce Lipton says that until a child is about 6 years old, they don't really have a filtration system. It's like anybody in their environment that says or does anything or transmits strong emotions is literally entering that information directly into the subconscious mind of that child. To my way of thinking, it's like somebody is sitting down at a keyboard and programming that child. I'm angry, I'm programming a kid sitting next to me. I'm feeling this, I'm programming that kid sitting next to me. If we could get that image and appreciate it, I think it's like, I need to be really, really aware of what I say because it's going right into the small child's subconscious mind and they're going to make it about them. They're not going to see it as my malfunctioning. They're going to make it about them and consider that they are malfunctioning. So to debug the human computer, and I would suggest starting with the family world, try this or consider this. Make a vertical list. You can maybe do it with a Excel spreadsheet or in a pad. A list of people in your family world most influential. And you would add father, mother, obviously, sisters, brothers, stepsisters, stepbrothers, stepparents, maybe a grandmother or grandfather or more if they were part of your life, aunts and uncles, cousins. Anybody that would fall into that area with whom you or other family members exchanged energy. Always talking to Aunt Susie, for instance. You would have information about Aunt Susie. She's related to you. And if your mother hated her, you would have picked up that hate. In all likelihood, you would have absorbed some of that toward yourself, as well as you would have that feeling toward Aunt Susie. Like, yikes. I didn't mean to do that. But that's how energy works. We would have absorbed it. So now you've got that whole list of people. And if you know how to do muscle testing, if you could rate 0 to 10, easy enough, whether you do muscle testing or not, you'd be able to do that. Or use a coach to help you identify the relative positive, negative impact of those people on your perceptions of yourself. So Aunt Susie, for instance, what 10 being most positive, 0 being most negative, where does Aunt Susie fall? And maybe it would be a plus 10 and a minus 10. 0 would be, I don't, I don't know anything about Aunt Susie. I'm neutral on her. But positively, I'm on a 10, which means, of course, that there's no other number on that scale. It's like all good. No, Aunt Susie, I loved her. She was wonderful to me. And every time I was around her, I felt good about me, her, the family, life. That would be great. That'd be great. But you would be able to identify this plus 10 to minus 10 relationship of that person to your life. Now, you may want to get more specific. And by that, I mean this. If Aunt Susie was particularly healthy or particularly successful, and people around the house said, you know, you look a lot like Aunt Susie. You kind of remind me of Aunt Susie. You would then identify with her health. You would identify with her vitality. You would identify with her success. And you would have been able to absorb some of that energy. You would have gone into alignment. So those seed thoughts, those consciousness forms of vitality, health, and success would have accrued to you because somebody made a reference that you were like Aunt Susie. This perhaps is a little bit more common for some of us, is that somebody says, you're just like, fill in the blank, as a means of being cruel and unkind. They were so upset, they were so angry that they used that cursing, and it really is a curse when they delivered energy like that that is so negative toward us. Like, you're just like so-and-so, and there, and that means something really bad. Like, oh. And now we had that awful, awful hit to our self-esteem, that dent to our consciousness, sense of self, that, like, ooh, I got to get that dent out. And we do, and we can heal it. And if we can understand, as we look at this list of people in our family world, it's like, what do we want? What do we want? We want to be able to put our attention on every single person in our family list, our fathers, our mothers, everybody else. And as we do that one at a time and assess where we are emotionally, what our emotional state is, and then work on quietly observing that person, the object of our attention, until it elevates, until we arrive at feelings of love and compassion for them. They're just like us. They're acting in their own self-interest, and they always have, same as us, according to their level of awareness, same as us. Everybody acts according to their level of awareness. They don't act outside of that because it's not available to them. Behaviors outside of their consciousness don't exist for them. Yeah, that's why we're constantly trying to elevate our consciousness so better behaviors, better thoughts, better feelings, better words, more loving exchanges are available to us. And when we can offer high vibration energy to each one of those family members and we get flat on them, we're at least neutral but ideally way up into the positive numbers, we would have increased our ability to live to be 120 and healthy, because we would have eliminated the sources of so much emotional and energetic toxicity that there's nothing there to kill us. Would you consider your family of origin like roots? Ah, my father and mother and my grandparents and the other branches, your siblings and so on, cousins. You'd go, yeah. It is so easy, right? Wouldn't you think, I want that tree to be healthy. Do you think it needs to have healthy roots? Its relationship with roots needs to be healthy? Yes. Our relationship with our roots needs to be healthy. We need to be able to reinterpret stuff so we see them as noble, as good, as wonderful, as doing the best they could, as living according to their level of awareness, and we need to get into a place of love and compassion. This idea of living to be 120 and healthy, while it's appealing to me, it's real interesting. It sounds like a cool challenge. I don't want to climb Mount Everest. I want to climb the mountain of time and a mountain of consciousness. That's appealing to me. Those ideas appeal to me. But frankly, this is not going to appeal to a whole large percentage of people. Only a small percentage will find this interesting. But then I think running a marathon only appeals to a small percentage of people. And running ultramarathons appeals to even a smaller percentage of the population. That's no big deal. No big deal. To a lot of people, 120 years, like, wow, number one, that seems unattainable. That seems way, way beyond my comprehension. I can't have any belief in that. And secondarily, it seems pretty undesirable. I've seen pictures of old people slobbering on tubes and drooling, and yeah, it's like, no, 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 no. Don't worry so much about the 120. But the concept of healthy, that certainly can be a goal. No matter what age a person chooses, I'm going to live to be 60 and healthy, 70 and healthy, 80 and healthy, 90 and healthy. As long as you have healthy in there, it's a whole different experience. We all could do that. If we think health, the way we think, the emotions we feel, and our body that we have, that all of those things are outcomes. They're outcomes. They're the harvest of our consciousness. They're the harvest of our sowing and reaping. And we sow thoughts, feelings, words, and actions. Our behaviors that we've chosen are the ones that are producing our lives or suffering, our health or illness, our vitality or lack thereof. Those things are all symptoms of our consciousness. I think that phrase, I like it, of course, to live to be 120 and healthy, but everybody has to paraphrase it, modify it to make it more reasonable for you as an individual. And you're going to, whether you do it consciously or unconsciously, because you're going to choose how you live and how you die and how you make that transition. You're going to decide how long you live, and so am I. And you and I are going to have to make decisions. We will, one way or another, how healthy or ill, how comfortable or suffering we're going to be. So we're going to choose live, we're going to choose the number, and we're going to choose how healthy. Seems like there's no other way of dealing with it other than, yep, I'm going to have to do that. That's right. For the people who are interested in that spiritual or physical climb to 120 years, no problem, no problem. But choose some other number. Just choose some number and start to develop the ability to believe in, that's right, I'm the one who gets to choose the number that I live until. Yeah. And keep live in there. So we live life, not just suffer through it and can't wait till it's over. And we choose healthy. And those programming statements with living and healthy, no matter what the number is going to make a whole huge difference. And it's going to give us an opportunity to grow spiritually, because we're going to recognize that we have to be connected to the source of all life to be healthy and to happy and to live to whatever age it is we choose to. I would like to end the service with a prayer. This is the pluralized version from the prayer from letter 8 in the book Christ Returns Reveals Startling Truth. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness, and as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.